back to the War at 33 podcast. I'm Adam Barrow.
I'm Benjamin Richardson.
So our album for today is Close to the Edge, which is a 1972 release by the British progressive rock band Yes. So, yeah, let's get right into it, I guess. Talk about some of the musical content of the album.
So, something to note on this album is that, is it the first symphonic prog album? I think it might be.
I couldn't tell you. I'm not super well-versed in that kind of history and stuff.
All right. Well, it's one of the most influential symphonic prog albums. Mm. And basically, it's like, it's only three tracks, but 40 minutes.
Yes. So the title track, Close to the Edge, actually is 18 minutes long and takes up the whole first side of the album.
And then the second side is And You and I.
And then Siberian Kachru.
Kachru.
Yeah.
Made up word. Yep. But, yeah, and like symphonies, I guess, a lot of these songs, I almost don't want to call them songs, these pieces have movements, and they're very orchestrated.
Yeah, so Close to the Edge and You and I both are
four
separated into four movements, I guess. And the Siberian Kachru is a standalone song. So you can kind of say it's the longest song. Yeah, I mean, that's 9 minutes. By itself, just like a song.
So yeah, right off the bat, like very classical influenced. Like you know, not a lot of, you don't see movements very often in popular music aside from jazz. Like you know, suite.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
A suite is definitely a good way to describe this stuff.
Nah,
you don't think so?
A suite is like a series of like pieces that are played after each other to like that usually you dance to.
Okay.
I guess you could dance to this, but
yeah.
I would just call this more like, I don't know, like super classical influenced rock.
Yeah, I don't know the origin of the word suite. I've always thought of it in the context of like just a multi-part pop song.
Yeah, so like in classical music, it's like there's a specific term for like everything.
I got you.
It's very form-based in classical music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but suites are definitely an old form.
Which, once again, classical music, I know nothing about.
I know a lot about.
Yeah, so there we go. All right, so Close to the Edge, I mean, that is one of my... So the title track is
an 18-minute epic.
Yeah, that's got to be one of my favorite songs ever.
This is a song, like, after I heard it, I was like, wow, that's the best prog song I've heard. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, that's just all I thought. I was like, this is the best prog song I've ever heard and probably will ever hear.
I mean, it's basically, like, it's like a masterclass in how to make, like, heavenly moments.
Like, oh, yeah.
Just, like, there are just so many individual parts of the song, like just very specific moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like I cannot believe they pulled that off. Like I cannot believe how good that
sounds. Right. So like, I guess by the advantage of having like a super long song and like longer song structure is that you can build infinitely longer and, you know, gradually go down and build up again like infinitely greater.
So the four movements of Close to the Edge are, one, the Solid Time of Change, which is kind of like an instrumental. And that's like really, really complex, really fast-paced guitar.
And that also includes the first verse and chorus.
Oh, okay. And then it's Total Mass Retain, which is kind of a more standard rock, I guess. Then the third is I Get Up, I Get Down, which is, that's pretty amazing stuff. With and that's kind of not super rocky.
It starts off like almost like an ambient, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And it's like...
But we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, we will.
That's definitely my favorite moment from the album.
And then the fourth is Seasons of Man, which is almost a reprise of the previous three. So that's kind of where it gets... I mean, Seasons of Man, I would say, is my favorite movement, I guess. Just because, like, the ending, like, oh my gosh, I can't even describe it. It just builds up so well and incorporates lyrical... themes I Get Up, I Get Down, and musical themes.
So, like, it almost seems like the first, like, section kind of, like, introduces all of the lyrical themes and melodies that will be, like, built on for the other three movements, essentially. Yeah.
And then the Seasons of Man, it all comes together and culminates. It's so good.
I feel like movement music, it's very scary, but, like, for me, this is an album I don't really listen to, and I'm like, oh, this is the next movement. I really don't think about it that way. And
they all flow together very well.
Right.
So Solid Time of Change, we were talking about, like, really fast-paced guitar. I mean, really intricate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, like blistering speed. It sounds it's really cool for the amount of time that it goes. And then it's like a harmony, like da da, and then it like all comes da, crashing da, down, da, da, da.
And then it gets into more like a sing songy like rock song.
Yeah. Da, 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 da,
da, da, da, da, right.
Yeah.
Something I will note right here is like this is so listenable for like how grand it is.
Yeah.
It's very listenable. Like I'm never like, I don't know. I do think it borderlines. Do you think it borderlines pretentious at moments?
Maybe. I guess. Yeah.
I know that's
maybe some of it, you and I.
Yeah.
You're like, this is like, it's great stuff, but it's maybe verging on being like overblown prog cheesiness.
Right. And that's like a common trope from prog is like you hear like, yo, this is like, you know, this is nerdy. This is like pretentious.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think they overall do a pretty good job of straying away from that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I think it's done very well.
Mm-hmm. And then, so that switch from Solid Time and Change, Total Mass Retain, that is one of the like click moments for me where I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, such
that's
a...
That's insane.
You can tell like, this is definitely an album that like all the musicians were like, it's like one take, right?
I guess.
So, I don't know, just, like, the musicianship of, like, getting all those cues down and having that flow, that's, like, only something really good musicians that have practiced can make sound effortless.
And then the Close to the Edge, Down by the River refrain Total Mass Retain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Like, the vocal harmonies are fantastic. And John Anderson? Singer.
He's such a good vocalist.
Yeah, very high, pretty high.
Yeah, I would say he's definitely, I don't know if he's quite a tenor, but he might be.
I couldn't tell you. It's a pretty high-pitched voice for a man, but he really is just very talented.
Very talented. I mean, like, he was the songwriter and lyricist, too, along with...
Steve Howe.
Steve Howe, who wrote most of the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, he's really good. And then, so that kind of slightly more standard rocky stuff kind of segues into the third movement, I Get Up, I Get Down.
Oh yeah,
which is
my personal favorite. It starts with like, it kind of breaks back down into like this almost like ambient. I wouldn't call it ambient, but it's just like kind of droney. You hear like these electric sitar licks and like these like kind of synthesizer like drones going on. Like they're flowing and moving.
Yeah, but it's very chill. It's very quiet for a little while.
Right, and it's very muted. And then it kind of builds up. It like teases this climax, and then finally, like this vocal melody that John Anderson is singing when he says like, "I get up." And then he says, I get up, and like his vocal line, it just keeps on going.
So he keeps going, and then it's like, then organ.
It's like this huge explosion and this huge, beautiful line, and then like it almost sounds like God is
crashing down. Raining down from the sky. It's like,
I know organ, like a lot of times, you know, it has that church connection. So for me, that's like almost like godly.
Like spiritual. Yeah,
when Rick Rickman like slams on the keys. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. And then... Of course, it gets very then, quiet after that.
And then they do this exact same thing.
And then
thing
it goes right back up to that really high note, and he's going, ah, wow, wow, and then it slams it back on the keyboard.
And before that, it's like, another one of my favorite bits in that, in I Get Up, I Get Down, is before he builds up to the I Get Up, I Get Down lyrics, he has, like, he's kind of singing, and then there's, like, almost chanty vocals that are, like, by another member of the band who's running like counter. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Like the counter vocals. I eat that up.
Like you're a big fan of backing vocals, right? Like vocal harmony stuff.
Yeah.
I know you like that a lot.
And like you think about R.E.M.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Stipe, of course, lead singer, and then I can't, it's either Buck or Mills. I forget. But he would like always do like counter vocals
the harmonies,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And he'd be singing something else while Stipe was singing the main lyrics.
Right.
And like a counter melody almost. And I just eat that up. I love it so much.
I know,
and they do it really well here.
Right. I know that's like a 60s influence, right? Because I know that like the Beatles kind of were like the kings of that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like. And like guys like Simon and Garfunkel and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely like that part where he teases it out and then finally he hits that note that you've been waiting for in the organ. That's one of my favorite like musical moments probably like ever.
Yeah.
For me, personally. It gives me goosebumps like thinking about it.
Yeah. And then, so the fourth movement, Seasons of Man, it actually kind of, I think it's kind of cool. They kind of reprises Solid Time and Change. Like it brings back the like the, really the, fat, the noodly guitar, I guess. So it brings that back for a little couple minutes, which I think is kind of refreshing once you've had something really slow, like really pick back up in speed again. And then it kind of goes back into...
Like, this part for me, it's just, like, a recapitulation.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a... It's, like, all these old melodies that were... You heard throughout the whole piece, they're just coming back into, like, one cohesive verse. Kind of like the first one, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, it brings, like... Like, it's kind of the melody and musical content of Total Mass Retain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it's kind of mixed into the earlier guitar from Solid Time of Change.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of, like, the melody of Total Mass Retain. And they kind of sing, like, Close to the Edge. They kind of sing the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get back to the I Get Up, I Get Down.
Which is the chorus from the,
I Get Up, the third movement. Yeah. So they get back to that. Mm-hmm. And that just blows me away. And
how they go, like, full circle.
Yeah. They go full. They bring all these melodies and lyrics back. And then the I Get Up, I Get Down is just crashing. And it just feels so grand. And then,
so monumental. Yeah,
so I get up, I get down. And then it's like a little dun, 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 little piano.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Like a short little piano riff that plays after it.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds so beautiful.
And then something also worth noting is that this album like has like these electronics that are like...
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they're pretty revolutionary for the time. Like electronics in early 70s music. And like at the beginning, you hear like these like... I don't know. Like, I don't even know how to describe them. And you also hear, like, these bird noises, and you hear a river. Yeah. And something worth noting is that this album is, like, about being close to the river. I think it's from a novel.
Something like that.
The river of, like, the river has some, like, religious significance in the novel.
Yeah.
And then at the end, the river noises, like, return, yes. And it yeah, fades so out it, on this.
Yeah. Opens and ends with, like, ambient nature sounds.
Basically, of a river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of lyrics, for the most part... I mean, obviously, the return of the motifs and stuff are really cool. For the most part, they don't really mean much, like, that I can tell.
Right. I feel like they're... Like, this was never an album, like, I needed to understand the lyrics.
Yeah, it does not detract from my enjoyment at all.
And this seems like an album that it just seems like the lyrics are just too much to try to figure out. It's, like, what, like, 8 verses, like, a billion choruses. Yeah. It's just... It's immense.
Yeah, but that song, like, I'm every time I hear... that last bit, I'm just grinning ear to ear. I just love close that first song so much.
Yeah, like after I heard this song the first time, I just listened to it like 5 times over again.
Yeah. So this song really does kind of make the album. Rest of it is not bad by any means, and we'll kind of talk about it later. But it really makes the album.
Right. This track is
like if that had been
above average.
that's saying the least. If that had been released, like. I wonder how that would have been received if it had been released on its own. Like, how would have...
Like, if that was just, like, an EP, it was, like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it would probably be, like, the greatest EP of all time.
Something like that. Yeah. I think of Long Season by Fishmans, which is a one-song album.
Okay.
Japanese, kind of drum-pop group. Oh,
I think you showed me that a while ago. Yeah,
and that, little piano riff I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That actually kind of reminds me of the opening piano on Long Season.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's a 35-minute song, which is the whole album.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I actually don't know how they would put that on vinyl now that I think about it. Like how you put a one-song album.
Right, because you got to flip the side.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like sometimes songs like that have like... They'll probably have a flip integrated within the music.
It came out in the 90s. I don't know if they ever even pressed it, but...
Right, you know, because, like, you know, at a certain point in time, like, by the 90s, they weren't really thinking about how it fits to vinyl.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they would have done this Close to the Edge, like, just made it even longer if they hadn't had vinyl limitations.
Do you think so? Like, who knows what they could have done
exactly.
If they had, the technology we have now.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they had no side-length limitations, if they just decided, like... Like, screw it. Let's just keep going. Just make this a massive song.
I don't know. Also, at the same time, it's like, I don't know. You just never know. You know?
Like how
could they have added to that? Yeah, it's already so comprehensive.
Like, how much more could they have, like, brought back in at the end? You know what I mean?
Right. Like, or what else they could have introduced to, like, flesh out? Like, what it could have been, like, a even more movements than it was.
I guess.
Which is kind of scary to think about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It probably doesn't need it.
It definitely doesn't. Yeah. And I don't know, like, how the songwriting works in that. If they're focusing more, like, on lyrically first, like, melodically, or, like... you know, it's stuff like this. You just have... I have no idea how it came together. It's so... Yeah. It's so comprehensive.
Yeah. Really, really an accomplishment.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess that's just, like, the characteristics of prog, though. It's just, like... How would you describe prog? It's just, like, more technical rock music.
Yeah, I guess.
That's all. That's like one of the characteristics. It's like rock, but a lot more technical, I guess.
Yeah. So the second side is it's not that amazing. Not close to the edge amazing, but it's very good. I think it's very good.
You don't think it's amazing? I think it's a little amazing.
I think it's a little amazing. It's not that amazing.
Right.
Like I'd say close to the edge is kind of head and shoulders above it.
Oh yeah, obviously. I mean, you can't touch that.
Yeah. So And You and I is also in it's in movements, but they're kind of less important. They kind of bleed together a little more, and they return to earlier themes, like before the end. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And but the probably the standout to me is the second movement called Eclipse, where there's just like massive synths.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they're just huge. They sound enormous, and I think that's really cool. And then the last movement. The last movement, I guess, is less than a minute long. It's called The Apocalypse. And mm-hmm. that is just a really pretty kind of acoustic guitar led, but with also with some like
right.
synth elements.
So
kind of
like
take a backseat. But very, very pretty. I really, really like that.
So the instrumentation on this album is really worth noting, I feel like. On this track, it starts with like the tuning up of a 12 string, and then it kind of gets into like this mm-hmm. riff, and then that like acoustic like strummy with the John Anderson vocals that comes back like twice
yeah.
and then again at the end, which is what Adam's talking about right now
mm-hmm.
with yeah, the, mixed that, with the synths and stuff
yeah, that little closing bit.
For me, this has like some of my favorite guitar moments on it, that and the closing track, but like I really love the guitar solo leading into I think it's the second or third movement. It's about 4 minutes in, but like
okay,
Steve Howe's, it's like, it has like, it's drenched in tremolo. It sounds like he's underwater. And it has like this, like, crescendoing, like, sequencing phrase going upward into the vocals. And, like, it just syncs so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, overall, I mean, And You and I, to me, very good. I think it's very good. It's just, as a long song with movements, I think it's a lot less memorable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I attribute that to you just being too blown away by the first one
probably.
For anything else to match that.
Probably.
They definitely should have saved that for the second side, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's still good. I mean, if the whole album were second side quality, I would still think it's a very good album. I would still like it a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just... And I like Siberian Catcher a lot more than You and I.
Oh, really? Because a lot of people single that one out as a weaker track.
You think so?
Yeah, well, people, I only hear that sometimes because it's definitely less orchestrated than the other ones. That one's definitely more, like, the most listenable, in my opinion.
And You and I?
No.
Wait.
Siberian.
Oh, yeah. True.
Like, it's definitely less orchestrated than all the other ones.
Yeah.
It's not multi-movement, and it's like, there's no recapitulation, really. There's no development on previous themes. But, like, for me, that one's, like, the most... I love the jam and the groove and the guitar licks. Mm-hmm. I think that one's like coolest as a guitarist to listen
Siberian
to.
Siberian Catcher. So we'll go ahead and move on to that one, I guess.
Yeah, that's, sure.
that's some of the coolest guitar stuff I've ever heard.
Oh yeah, you like that?
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Even the beginning, like, dun, like,
it's
like
that riff is so iconic.
Yeah,
it's so hard to vocalize.
I really like. I mean, it's like the guitar, and then they have like synth strings. I guess they're kind of like in harmony.
Right.
Like, dun. Like it kind of keeps climbing,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of—I mean—they kind of ride that out for the beginning in a while, in the beginning for a while, and they ride that out at the end as well.
Mm-hmm. A moment I love. There's a couple moments I love from this. I like when John Anderson. There's like this breakdown before the very last section, and like John Anderson's like using his vocal. He's not saying any lyrics. He's like using it like an instrument. And he's like Buddha, 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 Buddha. I love that, and then it mm-hmm. gets back into the final breakdown.
Yeah,
very cool moment. And all the drums kind of come together with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah. And then it kind of rides out on that synth string and guitar, like that that basic guitar riff harmony. And then on top of that, like it kind of like floats above it in the mix. It's mm-hmm. like one of the most beautiful guitar solos.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of like rides out for the last like minute and a half or so.
The guitar solo in this, one of them, it's like two guitars if you listen.
Really?
And it's like, you know, it'll be like one bend that just like goes from... one channel to the other, and then it'll be like whoa, and then like another guitar lick will come out of that, like decreasing volume. I think the harpsichord solo is amazing.
Yeah, like, that's, like, what on earth, like, they just threw that in there.
Yeah, so. I think that's really cool. Like, about, like, 4 minutes in, there's, like, this, this harpsichord solo by Rick Wakeman, I'm presuming. And, like, Chris Squire does, like, this syncopated, like, counterpoint with his bass, and it just comes together. It sounds so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
It almost sounds sped up.
A little bit, yeah. It really does.
It might be. I know the Beatles did that in, and on, In Your Life. Gotcha. That solo.
Yeah, Siberian Catcher is full of, like it's ostensibly just one song, right? But it's full of little, like, sections. Tiny, like shifts, like a lot of tempo shifts, a lot of times where they'll get quieter and they'll get loud again.
Right,
and you know, like, put a bunch of different things in there.
Right, and there'll be, like, vocal lines where everything kind of gets quiet and slows down, and then they get right back to tempo.
Yeah. So it manages to still feel decently focused to me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel too all over the place. Like, I feel like it's the right amount of all over the place.
Right. It's definitely cohesive, yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely comes together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one, especially, it's complete nonsense lyrics.
Yeah, I know.
Even Siberia.
Siberia goes through the motions?
Yeah.
Like, do you think they've been to Siberia? Probably not.
Yeah, Gotru, I think, what was the language? It was like Anderson was going around saying, like, it meant something in some language. Like, he had picked that word up and he thought it was really cool. And then it turned out to not even be a real word in that language. Like, nothing close.
Right, that's what I read. That, like, it was supposed to be from some language that didn't exist, actually.
Yeah. Right. He just, like, couldn't get the word out of his head. He's like, I have to make a song with this.
Yeah, it just kind of give you. That's how I feel about, like, the lyrics, like, are just kind of don't do it for me, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's almost, like, so busy, you don't even, like, need to care.
Yeah, exactly. And they manage at least to not be, like, overbearing and, like, stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, there's a lot of prog where I've found the lyrics, like, stupid. Like, what are you talking about?
Could you elaborate on that?
Like, some of the ones where it's, like, fantasy stuff, like dragons and, like, the ones where they try to force, like, a sense of epicness, I guess.
Right. I think whenever you say that, I just think of, like, Led Zeppelin, like, shouting out Lord of the Rings stuff on Led Zeppelin 4. that kind of was cringy for me. It's Stairway to Heaven, like, even though it's not really a prog song, I guess.
Yeah. Led Zeppelin's still pretty good.
Oh, yeah, but I just thought that was cringe. Really cringe. Yeah, exactly. And he shouts out, like, Gollum and Rambathon.
Yeah, and some of the ones were, like Prague is really prone to...
Being pretentious.
Yeah, being pretentious, and then they are really prone to trying to do concept albums.
Yeah, and, what's up with... Okay, like, when I think about that, just think about any Pink Floyd, like, famous Pink Floyd record.
And I am... Just a personal thing for me, I'm pretty resistant to concept albums.
I know this about Adam.
Yeah, like, it has to be executed pretty well for me to be like, this is not, for me to not think it's stupid. It has to be executed.
So,
like Kendrick Lamar, I think Floyd does it all right.
Sometimes. I think The Wall is borderline just like cringy at times.
I think The Wall's all right. I think Animals, they pulled off Animals.
Animals is excellent. That's my favorite Floyd record. But, really? That.
I can get behind that.
I think it has to be, bro. Like, after you, like, I don't know, man.
It's been forever since I've listened to Animals.
Yeah. That's also another album full of
very long songs.
Very long songs, very few tracks.
Yeah, and that actually kind of reminds me of And You and I, the way the whole album is kind of bookended by kind of short, really pretty acoustic pieces. It's like what's it called? Pigs? Not Pigs.
Pigs on a Wing.
Pigs on a Wing.
Or Pigs on the Wing or something.
And then And You and I is at least ended by a short little acoustic piece like that.
Right, at least that song is,
Yeah.
That song is bookended by the 12-string guitar.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, a little parallels there, I guess.
Something also, I think this is the first record to have an electric sitar, like, I feel like it's like the first, like, really famous record to have it on it.
Really?
Which is like...
Like rock record.
No, like
anything?
Yeah, because electric guitar, it's basically a guitar with sympathetic strings on the side that you don't even play that just makes it sound like sitar-y. Like, the only other famous song I can think of that, like, uses it a bunch is, like, Do It Again by Steely Dan.
Huh.
And that famously has, like, that guitar solo with the electric sitar. Like that.
Yeah.
But I just really like how, like, there's so many textures in here. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, Chris Squire's Basstown, oh my gosh. Like, that's why I like Yes so much, probably.
You think so?
Yeah, like, because, like, he'll go between, like, these, like, his bass lines, they're very, like, long. It's almost, like, really legato, like, boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, like, just really cuts through the mix, like, that punchy tone.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that bass sounds really good.
And, like, honestly, like, that stuff is super influential on Rush, like, their bass tone. Geddy Lee.
Okay.
Who uses the same bass, and, like, their bass lines are kind of reminiscent of each other, in my opinion. Hmm. Like, Chris Squire and Geddy Lee. So.
Yeah. You know, I haven't really thought about this very much, but, like, I wonder what kind of parallels there are between Yes now with, Yes at this point, with drummer Bill Bruford, who left after this album to join King Crimson.
King Crimson, another prog rock band.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Right.
I wonder what kind of similarities there are there. I've never really thought about it too much.
Mm-hmm. And I believe the first albums he played on was, like...
Was it Red?
I think it was Lark's Tongue and Aspic.
Oh, okay.
And then he's also on Red as well.
Yeah.
I think of, like...
Speaking of Red, that is probably... I have a hard time picking between this and Red for my favorite progressive rock album.
Oh, really?
I'd say it's those two.
I thoroughly enjoy King Crimson.
Yeah.
I definitely think I don't like the noodly stuff in Crimson as much. I know a lot of people are big into that. I just can't get behind that improv.
Yeah, yeah. Crimson, King Crimson would do full improvisation tracks.
Yeah.
Really notably on In the Court of the Crimson King, their debut, Moonchild.
Like, a lot of that is, like, improv-y.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're not soloing. It's almost like they're, like, talking sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. They're just, like
doing through their stuff. Instruments.
Yeah, to me, Providence on Red kind of builds to something.
Okay. And doesn't that have a violin in it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, prog violin. So. Yeah. But, since we're talking about King Crimson, one thing that I think, like, made Yes really popular, whereas King Crimson didn't have as much commercial success mm-hmm. as them, is I think that they were, like, a lot more, like accessible. Like, they're less theatrical.
Hmm.
Like, when I listen to, like, Thick as a Brick by Jethro Tull, like, the same era of prog, it's just, like, mm-hmm. Yes is, like, somehow, like, the least theatrical, but, like, the grandest.
Yeah. At, like, the same time. The music sounds big, but their, like, vocal performances and overall, it's just kind of a little more subtle and understated.
Right.
And just generally more accessible songwriting, I guess.
Right. And, of course, like, Fragile, their 71 release, mm-hmm. got them a lot of commercial success. Yeah. It had, y'all have heard it. What's the meme song is on that album?
The opener.
Yeah. Roundabout. Yeah. I was like, you can't forget that.
Yeah. That's a very good song. I really like Roundabout, but Fragile to me borders, like, it probably goes over the border of being slightly cheesy prog. Like, kind of overblown.
I think the, on this song, there's Cans and Brahms, which is, like, an excerpt from, like, a Brahms symphony, but it's, like, with, like, I don't even know what the instrumentation is.
Yeah, they just...
But, like, when I like, for me, that's just, like...
weird classical piece.
Yeah. For me, it's just, like, that doesn't, like... That's just a pretentious...
And then, it's like there are a couple really long songs, and then there are a couple that are, like, really short, and just kind of didn't need to be there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think Heart of the Sunrise is definitely, like, a top 10 Yes song.
Yeah, like, there were a couple of really pretty songs on there.
The bass then, performance on Heart of the Sunrise is, like, amazing bass line.
Then some of the super long ones, I was like, all right, this didn't need to be that long. Some of the really short ones, I was kind of like, this didn't even need to be here at all. Cans and Brahms especially, probably. And so overall, it's just kind of a lot less impressive to me. But I've not spent too much time with it. So.
Yeah, I disagree with Adam. I enjoy this a fair bit. Other than, I get what he's saying, though. It's definitely, I think Close to the Edge is definitely a superior album to, like, everybody that's listened to them.
Yeah.
It's just, like, everything building up and Yes, like, to that album, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really is. Really is an impressive feat.
Never mind. I was going to say, I think that's, like, the last album with, like, the original lineup. And I was like, wait, Rick Wakeman and Steve Howe weren't in the original lineup, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah, they have another prog staple. A lot of lineup changes.
Yeah, like of course, Crimson.
Like Crimson, we were talking about, the only member that's been all the way through is Robert Fripp.
Right, like, almost every album has a completely different, like, cast, almost.
It's almost like, there's some other band that does that that I can't think of right now. But it's like, it's basically just Robert Fripp. And then he gets whoever Fripp he show. Wants. Yeah, he gets whoever he wants to play with him for that album or that tour.
Right. And, kind of he's, moves on. He's famously pretty hard to work with, and he's a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
Famously, Greg Lake, another prog legend from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, he got his start with King Crimson on their debut record in the court, the Crimson King. Yeah. But they're like the only other like symphonic prog group I can think of, like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Hmm.
That I can think of, but I definitely prefer.
Would you call like early Genesis symphonic prog?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not too versed with Genesis. I definitely think it's prog. Like I've heard "Sunny England" by the Pound.
Yeah,
big fan of Peter Gabriel.
Yeah,
and his solo work.
Yeah, I like Peter Gabriel's solo work a lot. Melt.
Melt. What is that? Art that, rock and then his art pop. So, big fan of the art genre, art rock and art pop.
Arty stuff. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Gabriel's really great. I really like Melt.
How do you feel about Phil Collins' Genesis, since we're talking about it?
Yeah, I can't say I'm super well-versed either.
Well, that's basically like the Genesis that everybody knows, really.
Yeah, when they got more poppy.
Yeah, and you know, all their famous tracks are with Phil Collins singer.
And back to Yes, they did the same thing. They went in a very like poppy, new wave direction, actually.
Yeah.
Like synth pop in the 80s. And they actually scored some pretty big hits.
Yeah, they did.
Kind of eclipsed their prog rock success.
Right, and that stuff is very, very polarizing for Yes fans.
Yeah.
It's like, it's either like you're just into the prog Yes, which most people are, like myself.
Yeah.
Or some people really like it, but, you know, whenever you're a band that has success, sometimes you have that pressure.
People are gonna get mad at you for switching up.
You definitely have a pressure to stay in the sound that your fan base likes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of artists, and I think of in current hip-hop especially, a lot of artists are like, you're criticized for switching up if you change your sound too much,
right.
But then you're also criticized if you do the same thing over and over again.
Right. It's very hard to get the balance.
Yeah.
I think artists that are doing that really well are, I don't even think of like Tyler the Creator. I feel like Ego was a huge mix up from all these previous works. And
Flower Boy is a pretty big mix up from previous stuff as well. And he sticks the landing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Both of those are great records. And, I think of Kendrick too. I feel like his discog is pretty all over the place.
Yeah, Kendrick is never really doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Just like his last three records, they're like last four, I guess. His whole discog.
His only ones, pretty much.
Yeah, his whole discog.
Yeah. That's weird to think about. Kendrick Lamar has like cemented himself as a legend so early on in his career. Hasn't even been going for that long.
Right. I mean, only like 10 Good years. Kid, Mad City, and To Pimp a Butterfly, and of course the commercial success of Damn too.
Yeah,
like just really.
Yeah.
Solidified him as an artist.
Hopefully getting something from him this calendar year.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hopefully it's good. It's not worse than the Damn. That would be really sad.
That would be sad.
Back to Yes.
Yeah, just some closing thoughts on that.
Yeah, I feel like there's something else I wanted to say about it. Oh, a moment I really enjoy from the first track. Mm-hmm. It's in the third movement, and it's after like all the keyboardy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this like crazy like, it's just like a standalone synth lick like all the way down the keyboard. Like that is so cool.
And that leads right into the switch back.
And then
it
gets back into that fast paced drums.
The Solid Time of Change refrain that leads right into that. That's pretty cool. I agree with you.
Right. And the drums in that part are so crazy. They're so busy.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, it's very, very technically impressive.
Right. And as we just read, Bill Bruford left for Crimson partly because this album was really difficult to record.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'd be psyched to write a 20-minute drum part.
Yeah. Went from Mr. working for old man Fripp.
Mr. Fripp.
Yeah.
I also think the drums on there's a moment in Siberia True, where he's doing like all these like cymbal rides. Mm-hmm. Do you know what part I'm talking about? It's like the part is like when it
keep
comes
going.
Into view. That
yeah,
part
yes,
and like those
yes,
cymbal
yes.
rides right there are so virtuosic or something. Mm-hmm. How they're like they sound like they're like in time, but they're not, and they're very fast. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Great drumming on this record.
Absolutely. So yeah, definitely a big moment in progressive rock.
Right. A very grand moment.
One of the peaks. Absolutely.
For sure.
So, yeah. We definitely recommend it.
Close to the Edge by Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Peace out.